Welcome to Chai with Manju, with your host, Dr. Manju Shen.
Hello and welcome to a very special edition of Chai with Manju. Our guest today is Indira Nooyi. She has been consistently named as one of the most powerful women in the world. She's a trailblazer who made history as the first woman chairman and CEO of PepsiCo. During her term, PepsiCo sales increased exponentially, and importantly, so did the philanthropic work and community initiatives of the company. Her book, My Life in Full, has been a huge bestseller and has been called the blueprint for 21st century prosperity. She has received numerous awards and accolades, including the very prestigious Padma Bhushan. Let's meet her. Indira, it's such an honor to have you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
And it's a privilege to be here, Manju, and I was so looking forward to chatting with you. So thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you. And again, it was such an honor to meet you in person at the MIT event and get a signed copy of your book, which is my prized possession. I read it in 24 hours speed reading. And I have to tell you, I was recently in India and I was amazed by the impact this book has and also the universal appeal. Now, it's been a year since the book was released. What has been the most satisfying thing for you about writing this book?
A couple of three things. One is, you know, it was difficult to write the book because I never wanted to put my life out there. So, you know, I had to think hard about, do I want to do it? But ultimately, I had an objective, which is to talk about childcare and paid leave. And I used my life as informing the journey and why all of these issues were important. I got the book out. And two or three things happened. One, brought the issue of childcare, paid leave into the open to talk about it. Added my voice to the others. There have been many other voices talking about this, so I could add my voice too. Second is, I think a lot of immigrants, a lot of women looked at the book and read it and said, we see ourselves in the same story. Many Indian immigrants said, hey, that could have been me. Our lives were about the same. So a lot of people could relate to what I was saying. And I think they felt that they too could make it. So I gave them hope and the fact that, yes, it's a tough slog, but I too can get there. And the third thing is, because the book was honest and talked about all of the issues and the trade-offs, people said, what I'm going through is not unusual. I'm going through all these issues and trade-offs and angst and regrets and joys. It's normal. So I normalized these difficult issues that we have to deal with every day. So I think it opened the Pandora's box and allowing people to talk about all these issues and say, let's collectively figure out a way to address them as opposed to just talking about the issues.
That's true. Truly, I think the most important thing is it gave us all hope. So you, of course, have been a trailblazer all your life and you made history as the first woman CEO of PepsiCo. And what you said about performance with purpose is now being echoed across the world in so many corporate world, not just in the corporate world, everywhere. Yeah. What do you think has been your biggest legacy at PepsiCo?
Well, performance with purpose was indeed a legacy. But, you know, if I hadn't delivered performance, that purpose would have been diminished. Yes. So it was performance with purpose, performance first. And I think that when I did performance with purpose, I was doing it because I wanted to give young people a reason to come to work at PepsiCo, to say that we have purpose. We're not a purpose-built company like a pharmaceutical company or a hospital, but we're a company with a deep sense of purpose to do something good for society. So come and work for us. And by focusing on purpose, what we did, Manju, is in many ways de-risk the company. By focusing on transforming the portfolio, we could maintain growth. By focusing on environmental issues, we reduced costs and kept a license to operate in societies. And by creating an environment where our people felt wanted and loved in the company, we could attract the best and the brightest. So in many ways, doing purpose de-risked the company. So that's the reason I was doing it. There was no ESG at that time. Nobody was asking me to do it. I was doing it in order to future-proof the company and make sure we can keep growing and be profitable. Many years later, it's been codified into ESG. The difference is that what I was focused on is stuff that's unique to consumer products, food and beverage, and PepsiCo. Right. That was purpose as I saw it. Right. Today, I think ESG is being looked at through a broader lens. And, you know, maybe that's a source of confusion. I think once you whittle it down to the key metrics that impact your company and deal with it through the eyes of this is how we're going to de-risk the company, I think it'll become much more mainstream.
Right, right. When I read your book, I saw that every step of the way you worked hard. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of people starting with your parents, grandfathers, mentors. And it's like something was leading you somewhere. Do you think that you are a destiny's child and there's a lot more to do?
Oh my God, nobody ever asked me that question. I don't know. You know, Manju, I tell you, I always say that when I was a kid, I won the lottery of life because I was born into a family. I wouldn't say we were wealthy, but we were comfortable. Good middle-class family. But a family where my father, my grandfather, and to a certain extent, my mother all believed the girls should be educated as much as the boys, that we should be allowed to dream, to soar, all within a frame. You know, you don't allow them to go out of control, but all within a frame with discipline, focus on education. For a family so soon after independence to think like that is really amazing. So I won the lottery of life there. And then later on, when I got married to Raj here in the United States, I got married to a person and into a family who also believed the same thing, who was so proud of the fact I was working and kept telling me, you know, keep working, don't hold back. So in many ways, I think that I really won the lottery of life when it came to my family and my in-laws and my spouse. And that took away a lot of the problems that I could have had. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe that was karma, that was destiny, I don't know. But if I hadn't had that kind of support, the rest of it would have been irrelevant.
You know, when you read your book, the most special part for me in the book was the first page itself, because it starts with an Indian Prime Minister, Manmohan Singh Ji, and then President Obama, both of them claiming you as their own, you know.
Yeah.
That was just such an immigrant dream in some way. Uh-huh. And you received so many accolades, of course, the Padma Bhushan, the very prestigious Padma Bhushan, extraordinary Americans, and just, you know, also been inducted in the Smithsonian Portrait Gallery. When you receive all these accolades and awards, which one has touched you the most, or which one has been the most memorable? Is there anything special attached to any award that when you go back, it makes you very happy thinking about it?
I would be lying if the Padma Bhushan did not overwhelm me. Because, you know, growing up in India, you think of the Padma Awards as something way up there. And when I got the letter in 2007 that I was getting the Padma Bhushan, I was speechless, let me put it that way. Uh-huh. Because I had no idea this was coming. And when this letter just showed up and the call came from the Indian ambassador, I was like, oh my God, you know, I'm a daughter of India and India is now recognizing me in such a profound way. So it was an unbelievable feeling. At the same time, you know, this last weekend, I was inducted into the National Women's Hall of Fame here in the United States. Very humble event. Wasn't this big, glitzy, glamorous event. Mm-hmm. Humble event. But the meaning, the way women fought for equality, the way women fought to be considered equal citizens, to listening to the stories, thinking about the long march women have had, and then to be part of that march, you know, part of that group of women. There's about 300 women who've been inducted into the National Women's Hall of Fame since it started.
That's amazing.
To be one of those and to be inducted in that, I have to tell you, there was a point in the ceremony when the induction ceremony started that I was so overcome with emotion sitting on stage, I didn't know how to control my tears.
Oh.
So, you know, this portrait gallery was also unbelievable. Me in the portrait gallery, I didn't even know a portrait gallery existed. So these are all amazing experiences, but the National Women's Hall of Fame emotionally moved me. And then the Padma Bhushan, of course, I still cannot imagine being in the Rashtrapati Bhavan getting that award.
So, and you've always been such a huge supporter of women. You've advocated, you've encouraged, you've had the Women CEO Forum in your house. Every step of the way, you've been encouraging women. Is there anybody that you especially look up to or impresses you, or any woman who's been your role model?
You know, many people have been my role model for various issues. I look at people and say, how do they overcome adversity? How are they able to smile through problems? You know, so I look at different people for different things. But I have to tell you, people like Hillary Clinton completely blow me away. I mean, she's one of the smartest people I've met. Not just the smartest woman, smartest people I've met. And in face of so much criticism, that she keeps a smile and she keeps going and keeps fighting is simply amazing. I mean, she was at the National Women's Hall of Fame and gave a brilliant speech. You sit there and watching her and you say, my God, what a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant person who's given so much to public service. And then you think about people like Elizabeth Cady Stanton, who was the founder of the American women's suffragette movement going back to 1800s. And you look at that and you go, how far thinking was she? What courage did she have in those times to take up the mantle of getting women's equality? So I think when you fixate on one role model, Manju, you're actually doing yourself a disservice. Look at the whole range of people and say, what can you learn from each of them about how to make a change in public service, how to make a change in business, how to make a change in nonprofits? Look at each person and make take a lesson away from them. That's the way I put it.
I also like when women who are at pinnacle of success, when they have the human touch, because each person that you meet, you are making that impact that person is going to remember rest of their life. And I remember when you came to MIT, you met so many students and you took so many pictures, you signed so many books, but that person is going to be talking to their family, their grandchildren about the day they met you. And one of the things that impressed me, that thoughtfulness goes very far. And one of the things that impressed me in your book also when you talk about Hillary Clinton, what she sent you a personal note when you started.
Yeah.
Right.
I think at the end of the day, people will remember these personal touches and these emotional connections. The business lessons and all are fine. But ultimately, what touches them deep down inside is that this person could have ignored me, but he or she didn't. For that brief moment, I felt like I was valued. And I think that's worth 1,000 words in a book.
Yes, yes.
And absolutely. So I've always, I've loved people. And I always love, you know, I love interacting with people. And so I want to be able to inspire them, even in a small way, for a brief moment, if I can. And that's why I take the time always to reach out to people and talk to them, because I gain more energy when I talk to them. So it's an uplifting moment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. One other thing I wanted to ask you, as you briefly mentioned that you've had all the support, you've had some great mentors, but people often talk about you, and you have talked about it as well, about having it all. And you've also talked about the collateral damage that happens during the journey towards success. Tell us a little bit about it. And if you have any regrets, or if you could go back in your life and do something differently, what would that be?
You know, if I was CEO today and my kids were small today and we had technology, the way I'd manage my life is very different, because I would have had the ability to FaceTime them, talk to them, text them all the time. Remember, I became CEO when the iPhone hadn't even been launched.
Right.
Okay. So it was a whole different world where Zoom didn't exist. Remote working was not an option. For everything, you had to travel. You had to be present at meetings. If the school called you with an issue, you have to run there. So it was a very different world. In a way, I think in those days, we were juggling work and life priorities.
Right.
Constantly, the juggle. Every minute of the day, it was a juggle. When you chose to be with the family, behind your head, the nagging doubt, should I have been in the office?
Right.
When you're in the office, is a nagging doubt, should I have been home?
Right. Absolutely.
Today, with technology, you can do all of it.
Right.
May not be perfectly, but at least you can be in touch with your kids while you're at work. You can be in touch with work while you're at home. You can actually balance them to a certain extent, not fully, but balance them to a certain extent. So my one biggest regret, Manju, is that I was CEO at a time when technology wasn't mature. But then 10 years from now, I'm going to say the same thing about today. So it doesn't matter. So the technology was behind. But, you know, on balance, even though I was a good mother and I was there as much as I could, clearly, after your kids grew up, you wish you had more time with them as kids. That's inevitable. True. At the same time, had I not worked, I'd have felt equally angry about the fact that I didn't work, that I didn't develop economic freedom, and that I gave up everything to be with my kids. So the truth is somewhere in between.
It's a juggling act too, as well. You juggling always act, say that, right?
Right, yep.
One question I've always wanted to ask someone who's really been successful is what it feels like, because we are often taught that it's the journey that matters, not the destination. But when you embark on any journey, you always have some thought about the destination. And you are one person who's has an extraordinary journey that has universal appeal. We can all identify with your journey, your family life, whether it's you know, reading those Enid Blytons or getting that little square of Cadbury chocolate after an achievement. All of it we can, and the jobs that even the dress code that you talk about, I remember that was a big thing with me. I didn't know how to dress when I was in London or here.
None of us did.
I had to learn all of that. And then the different jobs that you've, where you've made so much impact, of course, culminating in Pepsi, which is now called the pinnacle of success, though something tells me that there is a lot more for Indra. So tell me, is there more joy in the journey itself or getting at the destination, or there is a different kind of joy in both of these things?
I think with the joy comes an enormous amount of responsibility and fear. Because as you move up, Manju, you have to earn your place in that job every day. Because somebody is always waiting to push you out because they want that job. Mm-hmm. And so when the world is changing so much around you, keeping yourself relevant and ahead of everybody else in the job is a lot of work. So have no fear. I have never come to a job and viewed it as a destination. I've always viewed it as part of a journey. Even when I became CEO, I said, okay, I'm CEO now for however long I am. Then it's on to the next thing. So, you know, people should never take a job they have for granted. You almost have to earn it every day. And if you go in with that mindset, you'll do very well. If you go in there almost like saying, hey, I've arrived. My life is cushy right now. Believe me, it won't last. And that's a problem. You know, people, many people take their jobs for granted. With power comes responsibility. With power comes enormous humility that's demanded of it. People forget that. I say that even now, if I stand up to speak in front of people, I have butterflies in my stomach. People think, you know, she's done it so many times, why should she be afraid? It's the butterflies in the stomach that make me perform better, that make me communicate better. If I was totally blasé about it, I might just be boring. But I'm on the top of my game. I bring my A game because of the butterflies in my stomach.
So I have to ask you, what does Indra do for fun? I have read about the band when you were young. What do you do?
You know, I listen to music. I listen to a lot of music. I read. I read all the time. I'm not a person that goes out much. I just read. I stay home and read. I like to be home. I don't like to go on vacations. I like to just stay home, read. I just put my feet up and read, doing nothing. I watch cricket. I watch the New York Yankees on TV.
Yes.
A lot. I watch the Yankees a lot. I watch football, basketball. I love sports. I watch them all on TV. And, you know, I used to take ballroom dancing lessons, but once COVID started, I dropped that and said, Raj is not learning ballroom dancing. Why am I learning ballroom dancing? So I dropped that. But, you know, I'm a very simple person, Manju. It's my home, whatever I do at work and whatever I have to do for public service.
What is next for you? What can be next for you?
You know, right now I'm doing a lot of stuff with nonprofits, and I sit on the board of Memorial Sloan Kettering, the National Gallery of Art, besides the boards of Amazon, Philips. I'm just trying to give back in any way that I can. I mentor a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And I think it's time to let the younger generation grow and thrive. And mm-hmm. to the extent that I can mentor them and help them, I think that's the most important thing. The biggest joy in going to the National Women's Hall of Fame, I took 10 other women with me. Okay. And it was such a fantastic experience to watch these younger women, get immersed in the history and watch the whole induction ceremony through their eyes. Extraordinary women. Some of them might even get into the Women's Hall of Fame downstream. Wow. But to me, that was more fulfilling than actually being inducted yourself. So I think mm-hmm. all of us who had so much success, Manju, should now pull the others up. That should be our job.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much.
I hope to see you again sometime.
I hope to see you too. You just made my day. I've been waiting for this interview since April. So I'm happy that you made it. I know you're going traveling soon. So thank you for make this time, and God bless you. And the world is a better place because you are there.
Thank you, Manju. Thank you for everything you do in the world of medicine. People like you actually make all the difference. So thank you so much.